is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
I love the X's and O's. I love working with kids, the player development, but the rapport that you can build as a coach with kids is something that I still think is my favorite part of coaching.
Duke Barther is the boys' varsity basketball coach at Berea Mid Park High School in the state of Ohio. Barther previously served as both an assistant coach and head coach at the former Mid Park High before the merger of Berea and Mid Park High Schools in 2013. Barther then became the head coach of the newly combined Berea Mid Park High School. Barther played his college basketball at Baldwin-Wallace University in Berea, Ohio for legendary head coach Steve Bankson before jumping into coaching during his junior season at Baldwin-Wallace as the boys' freshman coach at his alma mater, Fairview High School. Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Sign up now for their virtual camp 2.0 featuring 10 days of workouts with pro trainers from the Dr. Dish family. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Coach Mark Anderson from the Owensboro Thoroughbreds of the TBL, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram. And be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Are you tired of overpaying for your video and analytics platform? Well, it's time to check out QuickCut.com, a platform built by coaches for coaches. QuickCut is undeniably more affordable. It's all cloud-based and comes packed with features to help high schools and youth programs store, share, and analyze game film. Make the switch, get double the storage, and save your program up to 50% on the fastest-growing video editing system in the country. For more information or to request a free trial, visit quickcut.com/basketball. That's QWIKCUT.com. Get ready to take some notes as you listen to this episode with Duke Barther, head boys basketball coach at Berea Mid Park High School in the state of Ohio. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome to the podcast the head boys basketball coach at Berea Mid Park High School, Duke Barther. Duke, welcome to the Hoopheads pod, man.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely excited to have you on and dive into all the things that you've been able to do in your career. I want to start by going back in time to when you were a kid. Tell us a little bit about growing up and just how you got into the game of basketball when you were younger.
Yeah, I had an older brother. So my older brother's 3 years older than me, and sports was a big part of his life. And my parents made him take me everywhere he went. So, you know, from a very young age, I was, playing and tagging along with him and the older kids and doing all kinds of different sports. And basketball is what I fell in love with. He fell in love with, football and baseball. He played baseball in college. And I fell in love with basketball at a very young age.
When did you decide that it was only going to be basketball? Because obviously you were growing up and you're playing a lot of different sports. At what point in your upbringing did you decide, hey, basketball is the direction that I want to go? Because obviously you're playing all different kinds of things in the driveway and just chasing around with your brother.
Yeah, it kind of got narrowed down. I played everything. And then in high school, I played both basketball and baseball. And basketball was just, it was just a passion of mine. As you guys, I loved it so much. But I also liked playing baseball a lot. And I was actually either going to go to John Carroll and play baseball or go to Baldwin Wallace and play basketball. So that was what I narrowed it down to. I couldn't give up basketball. I just loved it so much, I don't know if that was the right, it ended up career wise being the right decision, but I was always undersized but it's just what I wanted to do. I could not imagine myself not playing basketball.
When you think about how you grew up in the game and the way you went about getting better and playing the game and what your summers looked like as a high school player compared to what the kids that you coach today as a high school varsity coach and the way they kind of come up in the game. How do you think about that or just look at it, good, bad? What are some of the positives that you see in the system today versus some of the positives maybe of the system that you felt like you grew up under?
We're around the same generation here. So you'll know what I'm talking about, Mike. My summers, from my sophomore year through college, they were dedicated to working on basketball by myself. And then maybe getting some friends to work with me. I'd wake up in the morning. I'd go lift. I'd had a job from 9 to 12 only. I do shooting drills, do jump rope, do stuff. And then we went up to the Village Green every night in Olmsted Falls and played. The organization of team stuff was just, it was a lot different than it is now. Everything is organized. That from coaching, your daughters, everything is organized. Kids don't know what to do if a coach doesn't have an open gym or a skill, workout. When we were kids, we did that all ourselves. And so, I think it's great that we're able to do those things with players. And one of the things that I always try to stress to kids is that love and passion. You got to do it on your own still, even though we're doing stuff with you.
Yeah, that's so important. I think that sometimes we get so caught up in today's world that you have to be with a coach, you have to be with a parent, you have to be with a trainer, you have to be somewhere. And it's really, the formula hasn't changed since we were kids. It's kind of different in terms of how you get there, but it's still the kids that put in the time or they seek out the coach or they're there at every single thing that you have for them, or those are the kids that end up excelling. And you and I talked a little bit in our pre-podcast phone call just about the way that sort of travel basketball and AAU has kind of taken over the scene and how maybe that's not the right way to go for every kid. And we weed out lots of young athletes before they even get a chance to get into basketball. And to me, I guess when I have conversations with especially parents, I think one of the things that I try to tell them is that you can keep giving your kid this and that and that and this and whatever. But ultimately, what it comes down to is if your kid doesn't love the game, like hearing you describe, like, I just couldn't live without basketball. You know what I mean? Like, how many kids today, those are the kids that have success. The kids who say, I can't live without basketball. Those are the kids that are going to ultimately have the most success because they're going to put in the time to improve and get better. So as a high school coach, what do you do? How do you try to instill that love or have those conversations with your guys that you're coaching now about, hey, it's not just, you can't just show up for all the stuff that's mandatory, but you got to put that extra time in. How do you have that conversation with kids?
When I was a younger coach, I showed them. I did a lot with them. As I've gotten older and more out of shape and knees hurt, I do a lot of talking to them. I have a point guard right now who has that same kind of passion. but needs to get stronger. And, you know, you can go into a weight room. We lift 3 days a week during the season, 3 days off season, and he's there every day. But until, you know, a player truly realizes that they have to get stronger, they're going to go through the motions. And so we talk. I show them film of, hey, look at this move right here. If you had 15 more pounds of muscle on, you're going to be able to finish Nan One. You know, I think just a lot of talking and explaining, and I'll be honest, I show a lot of video for the kids that want to get better, and here's what they have to do to get better. And not everyone's going to take advantage of that. Not everyone's going to do it, but I think it can help spark like passion in the players that just need that extra push.
When you're looking at video, do you primarily have them looking at video of themselves, or do you ever cut up like video of NBA guys or college guys and say, look, here's a move that maybe you could put into your game? Or just how do you approach your use of film with individual players?
Both. You know, I show a lot of individual things that, hey, this is what you did. This is, you know, imagine if you were stronger, or imagine if, you know, you can had more explosiveness on this move. But then I will show, not necessarily college, I'll show some other high school kids that are able to do some stuff, you know, if they take that next jump, they can do it as well.
All right, let's go back in time to when you're a kid growing up, and give me your favorite high school basketball memory.
Quadruple overtime game at Avon Lake. Our teachers were on strike, so we didn't go to school. We went to school, but it wasn't quite the same.
putting it mildly, right?
Yeah. And we went out to Avon Lake. It was just a weird atmosphere because, you know, the part of high school sports is that school day of, you know, getting ready. And, Avon Lake was in one game out of first place, and we were two games out of first place. And, we went in quadruple overtime. Our team made three shots at the buzzer to put the game into overtimes. And then we won in quadruple overtime. So it was unforgettable. We couldn't even move. I mean, we were just so exhausted, but it was great.
You don't get many buzzer beaters as it is to get three in one game. I would say that's pretty easy to be memorable for sure.
Yeah, like something was on our side, you know. Yeah,
there you go. Sometimes things just work the way they're supposed to for one team and maybe not the way they're supposed to for the other one for whatever reason. So nice. Thinking back to your decision, you talked a little bit about how much you love the game of basketball, couldn't think about being without it. And so that led you on your path to decide to go to BW and play basketball instead of going to John Carroll to play baseball. What do you remember specifically as you were going through and working through that process? It's one of the things that we talk a lot with both high school and college coaches about, especially when it comes to the recruiting piece of it, is trying to find the right fit for the student athlete, whether that's the school, the program, the coach, just the whole thing, that sometimes kids get caught up in the wrong thing and you got the Division One or nothing mentality. And so just when you look back on your decision to go and play basketball at BW versus going to John Carroll and play baseball, what were some of the factors that you put into that? Or was it just simply, I love basketball, I can't imagine being without it, and that's kind of what overrode everything else?
Yeah, you know, that was the final decision. Leading up to that, those are the two schools I decided upon. There was other options of Division III basketball schools. I couldn't stop. I needed to play basketball. I mean, that was that decision. BW, it was close to home. I mean, I wanted to be close to home still, I guess. John Carroll wasn't far, but in terms of basketball, I wanted to be close to home. I felt like, I knew some of the players that were going there, which we'll probably talk about some of those players in a few minutes, but I knew of some of them and at least going into the freshman year, I know who they were. And so I was already comfortable with going into that situation.
And you had an opportunity to play at BW for a coach who was there for a long time, legendary guy at Walton Wallace in the Division III, Coach Bankson. Just talk a little bit about what your experience was like playing for him and just maybe some of the things that you picked up from him, either consciously or subconsciously, that you've maybe taken into your coaching that you still, you know, do as part of your career today?
Yeah, I mean, I still have some of the same calls, actually. It's kind of weird. It's some of the same basic ideas I still use. You know, he just had it going on in terms of knowing how to run a program. It was you know, almost in that regard, it seemed effortless to him, or for him. You know, there's a lot of things that you take and a lot of things you don't take from coaches. I will tell you, I remember when he first talked to me, because, you know, so many kids, when they go and decide to play Division III, they're really good. They're really good high school players. You know, I was a honorable mention All-State high school basketball player. And I remember when I met with him and he looked me in the eyes and he said, "Duke, don't think you're going to come here and be some great player right away." And, I kind of was like, "Yeah, well, you wait, buddy." And, then we got to the first open gym and I was like, "Man, I stink." You know, coach was right. You know, I mean, so, and he didn't mean it. Like, he was blunt and he was honest. And I think throughout, you know, after our postseason meeting, after both my freshman and sophomore years, I took away from him what I needed to. I mean, he didn't sugarcoat what I needed to work on. He didn't sugarcoat, what my role would possibly be if I did work or didn't work. He let me know, bluntly what I needed to do. And I think personally, that's the best way to talk to players. You have to be truthful with them.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I think if you try to sugarcoat it and you don't tell them what they need to work on to get better at, especially for a kid who's thirsting for that, there's not everybody that wants to hear that. There's kids that obviously you've coached that don't want to hear that. But the kids who are good, who are going to be the mainstays of your program, I don't care if it's college or it's high school, whatever, those kids want to know, like, what do I have to do to get better? And when you have those conversations and you're honest with them, then they have an opportunity to improve and make themselves a better player and consequently make your team a better player. When you were thinking about that conversation with Coach Banks, and it kind of got me thinking about some conversations that we've had with Division III coaches, how when they go out and they'll recruit and they'll talk to players, and a lot of the players that they're talking to have never even seen a Division III basketball game and have no idea what that level of play even looks like. So how familiar were you with Division III basketball heading into that recruiting process and being a freshman at BW?
You know, I thought I was. I went to a lot of games my senior year, to the schools that were recruiting me, that I went to visit, that had me for a visit. I went to watch, but to be quite honest with you, I thought I was pretty good. And you know, it's hard to realize, you know, from the stands, even how big and strong and quick those players were. So I thought I was prepared. I thought I understood it, but I didn't.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I think when you look at yourself as a high school player, it's really difficult to judge unless you're actually on the floor with somebody, how good they are versus how good you are. And then, of course, everybody has I don't want to say unrealistic, but we all think pretty highly of ourselves as players. Obviously, that's what allows you to have success, is you got to have a little bit of an ego and think you're pretty good, because that's what it takes to be successful out on the court. But sometimes that can work against you in different ways if you start overinflating how good you are. So when you get to BW, you mentioned that, hey, all of a sudden we're like, wow, these guys, maybe I'm not going to be the star that I thought I was. So how did you adjust from a mental standpoint of, okay, I thought one thing coming in, and now I'm seeing that maybe I have to adjust. Like, I think about myself going to Kent, and I was pretty realistic that, I mean, I thought I could play, and I probably still, looking back on it, I'm like, I could have played that freshman year, but I kind of understood that, look, the odds of me coming in and being a star in my first year probably isn't going to happen. And it didn't happen. And then I had to figure out, you know, my whole basketball life, I'd been the best player on the team and played as many minutes as I wanted to, and pretty much got to do whatever I wanted to do out on the floor. And now suddenly I'm a freshman, I'm playing 4 minutes a game, and I'm going through
practice every day. It's a grind. It's tough. I'm playing against bigger, faster, quicker guys. And it's more for me. I think there was definitely a physical, you know, change that I had to make. I had to make sure that I was being able to compete on that level from a physical standpoint. But I think a lot of it was just mental and figuring out, how do I get through this without, you know, without that care at the end? Cause I knew I wasn't going to play very much. So just, what did you do from a mental standpoint to kind of help yourself make that transition?
You know, I struggled, my freshman year, I struggled. You know, I knew it wasn't a matter of being mad at a coach, or I struggled with how good the other players were compared to me. And, you know, I struggled with, Jesus, is something I, you know, could I ever do this? And it was the first time I ever really doubted myself in basketball. And, you know, it was over Christmas break. My brother was home. He was a senior at John Carroll. You know, he pretty much said, you know, pretty tough love that, you know, kind of suck it up. I mean, it's like, you're not, so what? You're not as good. What are you going to do about it? Like, you know, and then, you know, his example is he was a catcher for John Carroll, and he didn't play until his senior year. But he asked me, like, do you like the kids on the team? You know, who are your friends in school? And I named 15 kids on the team, you know, and he said, well, then sit on the damn bench and cheer them on. That's what you do. When you were in high school, you wanted those kids to do that. And then you got to, you know, spend extra time at practice. It's up to you what you want to do. Like, this is the first time you've ever dealt with it. So I was fortunate that I, you know, the same kid that was upset at mom and dad for having to drag brother along when he was, you know, 8 years old was helping me understand, you know, like, this is the real world now. This is what you got to do if you want to do it. If not, then don't do it. You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So which of your teammates did you get close to immediately that freshman year? Who'd you connect with?
Dwayne Sheldon, which, you know, Dwayne pretty well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I think he is, you know, he influenced my life so much. But right away, you know, he was in a very similar spot than me, but he got it more than me. He understood it. I don't want to say accepted that, you know, he was going to have to wait his turn. I think a big part of it was that, he came from, you know, high school Strongsville, where he was a very good player, but he wasn't the best player. And, you know, he understood that it was like, he understood he's going to work hard and move up. And, so, you know, myself and Dwayne and three or four other kids were in the same boat. And to be quite honest, while some of us were complaining, he kind of just, you know, just went along and said, we're going to, you know, we got to get better if we want to play. So
what did that process look like? We talked a little bit about how you went about getting better as a high school player. What did that look like when you realized, hey, I got to get better if I want to get on the floor? What do I have to do? How do I have to do it? And obviously we know that Division III rules are different than a lot of the Division I stuff that people are maybe more familiar with, where you got summertime workouts and this and that. With the Division III, the rules are different. So just talk a little bit about how you and your teammates went about trying to improve and get better and get yourself an opportunity to get out on the floor.
Well, our freshman year, what we did, there was about five of us that were all freshmen. At the same time that we're all, you know, kind of in the same boat. And, you know, we were friends. We were good friends. We hung out outside the court, but we stayed after. We had fun. I mean, that's ultimately why you play a sport, is because you like doing it. And, you know, the games themselves, when you weren't playing, weren't necessarily fun, but practice was still fun because we loved to do it. And then we stayed after practice. You know, at least three of us, Dwayne and I, had shooting contest after practice every day. We stuck around and we did it because we wanted to get better, but it kind of got us back to just having fun with basketball. And then, you know, I had the meeting with Coach Bankston at the end of the year, and he was pretty blunt. I had a different fire under me going into my sophomore year. I didn't know if I was going to be able to be good enough to play or not, but I knew that I was going to do whatever I could to try to, you know, and the stuff I did in the summer when I was in high school kind of doubled up, you know, my lifting, my, 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 my shooting drills, all that ball handling stuff. Whatever I was doing didn't prepare me to at that level. And so I got a taste of it. And I said, I was either going to try to do it and prove that I could possibly play, or I was going to have to find something else to do with my time.
You know? You got to double down on academics, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Theoretically, right, Duke?
Yeah, I wasn't quite ready for that.
What'd you go into school thinking you were going to do?
Had always wanted to be a teacher. When I was working at in high school from 9 to 12, I worked at camps, like my local playground, and I was like the sports coordinator there. And so, you know, kids from the ages of about 5 to 10 would go, and I would like do baseball, wiffle ball, basketball, different things with them. And I really enjoyed it. And I loved basketball, and I really liked working with kids. And so, you know, I said, boy, this is what I want to do. And so I was fortunate that I was, you know, able to do both.
Was coaching always in the back of your mind as you were playing, or did that come more on your radar after the fact? Like when you were picturing yourself as a teacher, were you picturing yourself as a teacher coach or just strictly as a teacher? And at least initially,
No, I knew that basketball was always going to be part of my life. It was my passion forever. I could not envision not having basketball in my life in terms of some way or another. So yeah, I wanted to be a teacher, but I couldn't imagine not being a coach. I still can't. 28 years into.
Yeah. Did you start looking at, like, while you're playing in college, did you start to, I don't know what the right way to say it is, but did you start compiling a notebook or your thoughts about, hey, when I get into my eventual career here, these are some things that I want to remember about what Coach Bankson did, or things that you saw other coaches doing? Were you that particular about it, or was it still sort of nebulous at that point?
Yeah, I wish I had. I threw all that kind of stuff away. Yeah, I had stuff. I was the type of kid, Mike, that, you know, I would go to Ranger Roundball Camp at Lakewood. I don't know if you remember Ranger Roundball.
I remember it.
And they used to hand out packets. I think I still have some of those packets of stuff. You know, I was the type of person that, you know, motivational quotes I would, you know, have all over the place. So I did. And I was the type of person, even in college, when I was watching college basketball, I would sometimes have a notebook by me, you know? So yeah, it was, I think I always knew, that I wanted to keep with basketball, and coaching was a way to do that.
It's always kind of funny that we've kind of established over the course of doing however many episodes we've done with coaches that there's two patterns of ways people get to coaching. One is the way you describe, where you kind of always knew that you wanted to have the game be a part of your life. You kind of knew that coaching was a direction that you were going to go at a fairly early age. And then you have the other people who are just strictly focused on being a player, and being a coach never really dawns on them until their playing career ends. And then they kind of look around and are like, what? There's no more basketball? Like, now what am I going to do to keep basketball in my life? And it's interesting how different those two paths, when you really think about it, how different those two paths are. That here's one group of people that they've been thinking about coaching the whole time, and they're kind of thinking the game, and they're trying to look at it not only as a player but as a coach. And then you have other people who just are strictly like, I'm a player and I'm trying to figure out how to get better, and coaching's not even, they're not even looking at coaching at all until the game ends for them as a player. And it's interesting to hear people tell those stories of how they come to the coaching profession, because there's really those two pathways, and each of those pathways can have obviously variations, but for the most part, that's the way people get there. It is, they either knew right away, or the game gets taken away from them as a player and they figure out, hey, I gotta keep the ball bouncing and get into coaching. Right. And so it's when the game has been as good to all of us as it's been, you want to be able to give back, and you want to be able to have it be a part of your life. And I think being able to impact kids through something that you love is really, you know, that's what it's all about. I mean, that's really what coaching, we all love to win, and we all love to be able to you know, compete and all that kind of thing. But ultimately, it's like you get to have an impact on people through something that has given you so much. I just think there's so much value in that. I want to ask you too. I asked you about your favorite high school memory. Give me your favorite college basketball memory. And again, this could be a game. Maybe it's a moment in the locker room. Maybe it's on the bus. I don't know where it is, but just what's your favorite college? When you think back to your time at BW as a college basketball player.
You know, I think Coach Bankston was fabulous. You know, I really do. I admire him. I do a lot of his stuff, but we had a lot of people that, how do I say this? They imitated him. And, so he had, it was something with Dwayne Sheldon and his roommate, Chris Sabula. Will still to this day, this is still a thing. So Chris and Dwayne were roommates from the first day they stepped on campus. And, you know, Coach, he really did care about everyone. But when you have a million kids coming through your system for 35 years of coaching, you know, you sometimes lose your who's who. So he would ask Dwayne and Chris, you know, how they're doing, how's school going, just like he did everyone. But he could never remember that they were roommates. And so he would, like, to this day, if I see Dwayne, you know, I'll go up to him and put my hand on his shoulder and say, "Hey, Dwayne, who are you rooming with this year, Dwayne?" And it's a funny thing. It has nothing to do with the basketball court, and it's really not a knock on Coach Bankston. It's just a funny thing. It was like a blank space in his mind, and we still laugh about it to this day.
Those are the best. I think every team that I've ever played on has some form of, whether it's imitating the coach, whether it's something, a little phrase that the coach always said. There's every team, every coach I've ever played for, there's always something, some phrase, some this, some that, that you remember that you could share with somebody who is your teammate, and immediately anybody you share it with is going to start laughing and be able to remember multiple incidents of like what you just described. I just think that's super funny. Yeah. And then to kind of go along with that same thing with memory, I remember this was probably pretty shortly after I graduated from college, and I was with my then girlfriend, now wife, and we were at a Homerama. And so we're touring these homes. I ran into my high school assistant basketball coach, and this is probably, so I was probably, I don't know, somewhere between, let's say, 5 and 8 years after having graduated from high school. And he said to me, "Now, did you play with," and he started naming off guys that were like 5 years older than me. And I'm like, "No." I'm like, "What are you talking?" Like, I'm like, no, that's not the guys who I played with. And I couldn't believe, like, how does he not remember? Like, how does he not know who was on the team with me? And then as I coached, and then you go back and like all those kids, it runs together. You're like, "Now, did he play with that kid?" No, in the years, and I'm sure you experienced the same thing, that you remember the kids, obviously, but when you try to put them in context with, okay, that was my 2010, 2011 team, it gets a lot harder. It gets a lot harder to put them in context. Let's put it that way.
Absolutely. That's funny. Yeah. The same thing happens to me all the time. I'll with kids. So yeah,
absolutely. That's good stuff. All right. So graduate from BW, looking for a coaching job. Just describe what that job search is like. And
no, it goes a little bad. So my second year, I was a much better basketball player. I wasn't good enough to get a lot of varsity minutes, but I kind of proved to myself that I could. And, basketball is still hugely important to me. I had some physical problems. I had tendonitis in my knee. And to be quite honest with you, it happens a lot at Division III. You know, I was starting to get into my major classes. I had to go to practice that second year an hour early to get like treatment on my knee. And then I had to stay after practice an hour late. I loved basketball, but I had a hard time sleeping because of my knees. And then the school I graduated from, Fairview, this is my going into my third year of college. The coach called me and asked me if I wanted to be the freshman coach. And so it kind of, I had a decision to make. And so my third year of college, I decided to stop playing at BW and coach. And, you know, it was a tough decision, but it really worked in my favor. So I actually started coaching high school when I was a junior in college.
So what's that look like? How confident or non-confident were you when you stepped in front of those kids for the first time?
I was pretty intense. It was the biggest word to explain it. I had a heart, you know, I was someone who all I did was, you know, live, eat, breathe basketball when I was their age. And so it was difficult for me to understand that that wasn't the norm.
Exactly. And,
so that was the first thing, but, you know, I loved it right away. I loved the coaching. The different perspective. I'll always say to this day, I was the best basketball player I ever was after I started coaching, when I was still in shape, still playing a lot of basketball, but I just saw the game from a coach's perspective a little bit while I was playing. I took to it right away. I loved coaching. I knew, you know, within 2 days of coaching, actual coaching, that this was something I wanted to do the rest of my life.
What was it specifically about coaching that you loved? Was there one particular aspect you're like, man, I just love being on the floor with the kids. I love the X's and O's and diving into that. I love the competition. What was it? Was there one thing that really stood out to you that you're like, man, I this is the piece of it that really has got me hooked?
I think all of the above, but the rapport, you know, the rapport that you can quickly build with players. And right away, you can see just the way they looked at you, looked up to you, looked up to me. It was different. You know, I wasn't used to having people do that in terms of, you know, I was a college kid doing that with other coaches. And just that rapport you can build. And I love the X's and O's. I love working with kids, the player development, but the rapport that you can build as a coach with kids is something that I still think is my favorite part of coaching.
How do you do that today in your program? Do you do it in a formal way, or do you find that you have to do it more informally, meaning you're just doing it with conversations, whether that's in the hallway at school, whether that's before and after practice, whether that's just hanging out with them in the lunchroom, or do you have a more formal system where I'm guessing it's probably a little combination of both?
Yeah, it's a combination of both. You know, we have individual meetings 3 times a year, before the year, middle of the year, end of the year. That's the formal part, but I think the biggest thing, and it's not always easy. But I think the most important thing is for the kids, the players, to know that you care. I mean, that's the most important thing. If they know that you care for them, when you know, are in school and you're able to talk to them about, hey, you just got a C in a test. Like, they, how did you know that, coach? You know, like, they care. I mean, they want, how do I say this? They appreciate that more than anything else. And vice versa, if they feel like you don't care, it's going to be hard to develop that rapport.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's hard. Like, sometimes, I mean, it gets hard when playing time becomes an issue, because oftentimes, and I say this all the time to teams, playing time isn't about whether you care for kids or not. You know, like, you're the first player on the team or the 12th player on the team. It doesn't mean that I don't care about you. You know, like, that's not what that's about. So, it's not always easy for players to understand that, though.
How do you keep those kids at the back end of your bench that aren't getting minutes, but you know, as a coach, that they play an important role in the success of your team? Like, they got to come out and they got to play hard and they got to compete at practice, and then they got to bring the energy on the bench and all those things that you as a coach know are important.
You know, that has gotten harder. I think it's a societal issue as time has gone on. There's so many other places for players to play. You know, at one point if, you know, being part of Strongsville's basketball program, it didn't matter. You just wanted to be part of it.
For sure.
You know, I knew players that got cut from Strongsville's basketball program that it was their life dream to be part of it, you know, that I was friends with in college.
Yeah.
And that has changed because now, you know, every sport is 12 months a year. So if you're the 11th man on the basketball team, well, you can work out, you have an organized football workout or organized soccer workout or organized baseball workout 4 days a week anyway. Or you can go play, you know, CYO high school basketball, or it's not the same, but you can still do those other things. So it's harder. I mean, it has really gotten hard, to do. You know, I try to be quite honest, I try to, like, we have a couple players that are really helping our team that are in that role. And, you know, I've started each of them a game this year already. But they're part of our team. They're part of what they help us in practice every day. They have great attitudes. They deserve that a little bit. And still talking about them, and they still get to take part in everything we're doing. My guess is they're not totally, we've talked about it and I know they're disappointed, but they also know that the coaches care for them and it's not a personal attack.
All right. Let me ask you this, because this is something that I think when I was at Richmond Heights, we would sometimes have this conversation with kids and then we'd second guess ourselves depending on the decision and depending on the outcome of how things turned out. But let's say you have a kid who has been a part of your program. It's a kid you really like. It's a kid that you want to keep around, but it's a kid that in your heart of hearts, you know that kid's probably not going to play a lot of minutes. And we talked earlier about the need to have those blunt and honest conversations. So when you have a kid that's in that situation, and you're going to have that preseason conversation with them, or that conversation when you're making cuts and trying to determine who's going to be on the team, how do you approach a situation like that in terms of what you say to that kid? And then you already kind of talked about how you handle it moving forward, that if they're a part of the team, that you're going to make them feel as much a part of the team as you possibly can. But we know that that's even more challenging because that kid probably has a trainer and an AAU coach and a parent who's all telling them, hey, you're going to be, you know, you should be a starter this year. So I'm guessing that that's a more challenging conversation than it's ever been, but I'm just curious how you handle a conversation like that.
I think you just be blunt. That's what I believe. I think it's the most fair thing to the player. We'll talk about at our early season meeting, here is, if we had a game tomorrow, here's your role. Here, it doesn't mean it's going to stay that way, but here is your role. Go home tonight, talk to your parents, talk to your friends. Are you going to be able to handle that role if it stays that way? And, you know, some kids choose not to and some do, but I think it's only fair where they find out 10 games into the year that, boy, I didn't know I wasn't going to play at all.
Right. This is what I signed up for, right?
Yeah. So I just think you have to be honest early and, you know, it still doesn't always work out. You know, a lot of kids are happy they made the team and think they're going to earn that playing time. But I think as long as you're honest with them, they might disagree with you, but it's an opinion. And, you know, they can't really, you know, ultimately I've had players come back and say, I appreciate you doing that. I wasn't happy at the time, coach, but I appreciate you letting me know what my role would have been, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's something that it's hard to hear in the moment, but I think when you look back on it retrospectively, I think most kids understand and respect their coaches far more probably than they did in the moment, because they know that ultimately the coach had their best interest at heart. And people forget. I mean, I know it's hard, man. It's hard with the way that, as you said, the way our society is today and just the way that the youth basketball system is set up today, that, you know, everybody thinks that they should get this. And it's interesting to sit and, you know, now my son's a sophomore in high school. And so you kind of sit and you look at it, you try to, you know, and I kind of know where all the potholes are, where the mines are in the minefield as a parent, as a coach. And even then you sometimes sit and you find yourself saying, well, why isn't this happening? Or why isn't that happening? And then you go in your head and you're like, Well, yeah, the reason why it's not happening is because I'm a biased parent who I'm watching the game, but I'm only watching, you know, I'm watching my own kid. So I'm seeing the four right. times a game where my kid was open and somebody didn't pass him the ball. I'm like, why aren't they getting, you know, why don't they get him the ball? And then meanwhile, I'm not watching the nine other kids on the floor. And you know exactly what I'm saying, but yeah. It's just interesting as a high school varsity coach, the challenges that you have to dealing with your players, and you got to have those honest conversations. And then you throw the parent piece of it on top of it, where no matter whether you're a parent of the star player who kind of gets to take a lot of shots and play a lot of minutes, and inevitably those parents probably have some kind of complaint too that, hey, we're only getting 15 shots. We need to get 20 because we're going after this scholarship and this and that. Meanwhile, the 12th man is like, God, I just like my kid to get in the game for 15 seconds so I could take a photo of him for the family scrapbook. You know, it's just, you know, no matter what you do, you get, you know, you have those challenges. How do you attempt to work with parents and incorporate that into your program so that you get them on your side as much as you possibly can, instead of grumbling up there in the stands, which they're probably going to do anyway. But
I mean, it's you know, to be honest with you, what has changed a little there is social media, Mike, because you know you've probably been at games. I was at a basketball game, scouting a game this year, and the game's going on, and a parent is like tweeting about how bad the coach was doing in the middle of the game. You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, you're fighting with that a little bit more. You know, it's not easy because like you said, the parents, they care for their kid. I mean, that's ultimately what it is. And it's hard, but I will say this, I'd rather a parent be there, support their son and go to every game and be mad at me sometimes than not ever go to their kids' games.
So true.
And we've had players that have had that happen. You know, we'll have senior night and I'll have to walk out with the player because a parent hasn't been to a game. So I, you know what, when you sign up for coaching, that's part of it. And you can, as long as I can look myself in the mirror and know that I'm trying to do what's best for the kids, I guess that's all you can do.
It really is. I think it's funny. It reminds me, early on in the podcast, we had Greg White. He's a high school coach in Arkansas. And one of the things that he told us, he said, you know, when I'm dealing with parents, he goes, I try to remember that every parent's dream lineup is the four best kids on the team and their son. And he goes, if I keep it in that perspective, that's what every parent is coming to the games with, to my program with, I keep in mind that that's their perspective, that it helps me to get a better understanding of where they're coming from. And I think, like you said, you have to be able to communicate and you have to be able to hope that the parents ultimately are there to support their kids, support the team and support you. And we know that's not always the case, but I think as a coach, you have to just keep in mind that if you're doing a good job, you're probably not keeping everyone happy. If you're keeping everyone happy, then you're probably not doing a good job of giving those blunt, honest answers that you talked about earlier.
I agree with you. Yeah.
All right. So let's talk youth program, because you and I talked a little bit about that in our pre-call, just about some of the challenges that the system that we have with youth basketball. And specifically, I'm talking about here in the Cleveland area where we have travel basketball programs. And I'm not sure if every state has it set up the same way that we do here, but in Ohio, with a lot of our programs, you have a travel team of third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade, and you might cut down to maybe you have two teams. So you have 12 or maybe 24 kids at a particular grade level that you're kind of trying to figure out, okay, are these going to be the kids that are going to come all the way up? And yet we're already cutting kids at 8 or 9 years old. And I know we are kind of talking through it, but just give us your thoughts on what you try to do with your youth program to A, engage those kids, get them to know you, get them to know your varsity players so they can one day hopefully aspire to be a part of your Titan basketball program.
Yeah, our situation's a little different because we have three communities. So, you know, we have so many kids, children in our communities playing basketball. We have a great Travel Titans basketball program. It's really good. They do a great job with them. But there's so many other players that are playing. And I mean, it's very difficult to, we don't want to just support the Titans travel team. We love the Titans travel team, but there's, you know, you go up to the rec on Brook Park rec on a Saturday morning and there's 5 fourth grade boys teams playing there. There's 3 in Middleburg Heights and 3 in Berea. So what we try to do is do some things where we bring them to us, because it's really difficult with 3 cities to get everywhere and the travel teams. We have a night where we recognize them. COVID has kind of stopped it a little time, but we have a little youth camp over Christmas break. We have one in the summer. This past summer, we had any student from 3rd through 6th grade, which is our youth programs. We had a time 2 days a week from 9 to 10:30 in the morning where they were allowed to come and we did skills with them. So we love our Titans youth program. And to be quite honest with you, they're the better players right now. But we don't want to limit the possibilities of any other player. So we try to bring them to us as much as we can.
Yeah, that's very cool. I think the thing that I always think is really key to having a good youth program at the high school level is making sure that those kids who are part of your youth program, and that could be, as you said, through your travel program, that could be through your recreation program. If you're a private school, you go out and get involved with CYO teams and that kind of thing. But those kids have to be able to, in my opinion, they need to know who the high school coach is and they need to know who those varsity players are. Because I remember, and I'm sure you remember the same way, like when I moved to Strongsville in 2nd grade and my dad and I started going to basketball games, and I still remember tons and tons of those players. I remember them coming out for warmups to the pep band. And I remember thinking that one of the coolest things that I ever saw was the high school team coming out and slapping the backboard when they shot their layups during layup lines. And I was like, man, I can't wait until one day I can slap the backboard in a layup line. And
Mike's still waiting for that day.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for that day. Well, that day is past now. So I got it for a little while. Now I'm not sure I could do it anymore. But nonetheless, it's like, you know, I think that aspirational piece of wanting to be a part of the program and saying one day I'd love to be able to grow up and be a high school player and play for Coach Barther, because I've known him since I was in 3rd grade, because I've been to his camps and I've seen him at our games, and all those things to me are just so, so important. And I think that's really where, if you're going to have a successful program, I think, look, as a high school coach, you can have a successful year or two, or you can have a nice run with a 4-year class of kids who just happen to be really good. But if you want to have a sustainable program, to me, that connection with the youth program is critical.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially, you know, especially now with so many different options and for kids to go to, you know, different, like there's so many, I mean, every school district is what it is. If they're losing some players to private schools more, it feels like. So that's the best way to combat it is to try to develop a rapport early on.
I think when you do that, it's almost like, right, you're recruiting your own players, because you have to develop those relationships. Because as you said, you think about college basketball and the transfer portal, a number of guys that are going from one school to another and jumping from one level to another, whether they're jumping up or they're jumping down or they're going again. Like, you think about your experience as a freshman, and there's a lot of kids that in that experience today come in and you don't play and, man, I'm out the door. I got to go somewhere else where the coach respects me and where I can get my minutes and this and that. And we see that dropping down to lower and lower levels. You see it obviously at the high school level. You see it now at the AAU level. Like, I'm jumping from one team, or I crack up. You go to these AAU tournaments and playing against a kid one weekend, and then the next weekend he's on some other team that you're playing against them again on a totally different team. You're like, what? Is he just a free agent? You just go wherever you want to go. And it's kind of the way that things are. It's one of the changes to just, again, as a coach, I'm sure you just have to figure out ways to be able to deal with that. Talk a little bit about how you get to Mid Park, what is now Berea Mid Park High School, but when you first got there, it was Mid Park High School. Just how your relationship with Dwayne, who we talked about earlier, who full disclosure, Dwayne and I were teammates at Strongsville. So Dwayne was a year behind me, and you know, he's a guy that I've known forever, and he's had a tremendous amount of success in his own right. But just talk about how your relationship with Dwayne kind of got you an opportunity, and then we can kind of.
Yeah, it completely did, Mike. I was interviewing for teaching jobs, and I hadn't really spoken. I was very close to Dwayne, but I after graduation, he kind of lost touch for a couple months, you know. And I was interviewing for a teaching job at Mid Park, and I walk out of the interview, and Dwayne Shelton's there. You know, like I hadn't seen him in a couple months. I say, "Hey, man, what is going on? How are you, Dwayne?" And I'm sitting there talking to him. And he had just literally been offered the head boys basketball coaching job that day. And he said, "What are you doing? You know, what are you interviewing for? You interested in this?" I said, "Yeah." So, you know, I'm hoping that I got the job because I interviewed well and they wanted me. But I think Dwayne had a lot to do with it. You know what I mean? I think like he said, yeah, oh, that'd be great. You know, I'd love for you to coach with me. And so I got called the next day and got offered the job. And, you know, I was a JV coach for 1 year. And then I was Dwayne's assistant for 4 years, I believe. And then when he went, did he become an assistant at BW?
I think he first was an assistant. I don't know how many years. It wasn't too many. It wasn't very many years that he was the assistant before Coach he got Banks the retired. Before he went to Heidelberg. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So he, you know, he was a big influence on me. He really, when we started out at Mid Park, it was very similar to when I first got my first head coaching job at Mid Park. We were pretty low. We were talent pool. Everything was low. And I learned a lot from Dwayne and how he handled those situations that helped me when I was trying to build that program at Mid Park. So he was a big influence.
What are some things that you took away from that time that when you think back have influenced what you've done as a head coach?
You know, I think the biggest thing is that first year, our talent pool is very low. And, we argued about it a little bit at the time. I thought we could have done some things to try to compete more. And I remember Dwayne saying, "This is how we want to play. You know, this is the kind of style we want to play. We're going to probably have a hard time winning no matter what style it is, but I'd rather start teaching it now so our kids understand it instead of just trying to compete and lose by 5, 10, whatever." And it really paid benefits because, you know, 2 years later, after winning 4 games, we won 16 games or 18 games. And then, you know, it was that same style, which I think looking back on, we would have been further behind. You know, if we would have said, "All right, we're going to play a lot of zone just to try to keep the score low, do whatever." We would have had to teach that aggressive style later on. We didn't have to teach it because we already knew it.
Hard to sometimes think long term, right? I mean, sometimes you get caught up in the moment of this game, this instant, and you got to step back and be able to see, I think, that bigger picture, especially once you become a head coach, right? It's totally different when you're sitting in the assistant's chair and that record isn't attached to you and your name's not in the newspaper article. It's a lot easier. I sat on the bench as an assistant coach for whatever, 13 years. And look, I understand that it is way, way easier to sit there and give suggestions or think that, hey, we should do this or do that. But ultimately, I'm not the person that has to answer to those, whether I'm answering to a player, whether I'm answering to a parent, whether I'm answering to an administrator, whether I'm answering to a reporter. I wasn't the one who had to answer those questions. So ultimately, the decision was out of my hands. And then once you take over your own program, clearly you become the lightning rod for all those decisions. And you realize that it's more complex than just, hey, we got to do X, Y, or Z. There's other things that you have to take into account. And one of them is what's going to be the long-term vision for your program.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, what I appreciated about Dwayne is he would listen, and he ultimately, and it helped me later on, he ultimately had to make the decision. You know, there's a lot of things that he, advice that he took from me and other coaches, but there was also things that he thought were so important that he was going to go against some things because that's how important he thought they were. And that's being a leader. That's being a head coach. You know, sometimes you got to even make some of your own assistant coaches unhappy if it's a decision that you think is that important.
Yeah, no question. No doubt. There's no doubt about that. When you think about what you learned about being an assistant coach, then you become a head coach and now you've got to find your own assistant. So when you think about what you're looking for in an assistant coach, some characteristics, some traits, some things that you think make a good, and let's just specifically focus on high school. What makes a good high school assistant coach when it comes to a high school varsity assistant coach or a JV coach or a freshman coach? What are the characteristics or traits that you're looking for in those guys?
All right. I think number one, loyalty is very important. Loyalty to the program. You know, in this day and age, if a parent, a community member feels that they can have a voice to complain or sound off, they're going to find that voice. And so you want an assistant coach, a JV coach, a freshman coach, middle school coaches that are going to support you, the program and the head coach. Secondly, I think it's very important that to have coaches that have the kids' best interest at heart. That ultimately we're coaching kids to make them better. And, you know, there's some coaches that they love basketball and want to win, and they forget that they're dealing with high school players and high school kids. And so that's that, the being there for the kids. And I've been fortunate for so many years to have people that do this the right way. And then the third thing is I want coaches that tell me when I'm doing something wrong, because there's times where, you know, I'll do stuff wrong, and I don't sleep well at night after it, but it's a lot better when an assistant coach can grab me beforehand and say, "Hey coach, settle down," or, you know, "This is what happened," or, you know, stuff like that. I don't want coaches that are just going to be, "Good job, coach, do this, do that." And I want them to be able to tell me if they disagree with me.
How long does it take you to develop that kind of trust with another coach? And clearly there's guys maybe that you've had previous relationships with that come in or are part of your staff. And so then you have already have that rapport built up with them, just like you're trying to build rapport with players. But that's not always, just like we talk about being blunt with players or having players hear the things that maybe they don't want to hear. As an assistant coach, and I know I can speak to this a little bit, that, you know, there's times where you have to feel comfortable to be able to challenge your head coach. And if you don't, then you end up biting your tongue and it's not good for the program. So just what's been your experience as far as developing that kind of relationship where there is that honesty, that trust factor behind closed doors? And then once you step out of the coach's office, you're presenting that united front, like you talked about, where, hey, we're all part of this program. This is a program wide decision. It's not, "Hey, I can't believe Duke's doing that. You know, yeah, he doesn't know what he's doing." So how long does it take for you to develop that trust with guys that you bring in as part of your staff?
I'm fortunate that I think developing a friendship with them is pretty important. If your assistant coaches could be friends, you're much more likely to tell a friend what you feel, you know, if you don't agree with them. So I've been fortunate literally from seventh grade on, like through high school, to have assistant coaches that I haven't had anyone come in that I don't know. You know what I mean? Like I've known them. I've been friends with them before they became an assistant coach or a JV coach or a freshman coach. So, I think the friendship thing is pretty important. If you can, you know, I'm not saying hang out with them. Everyone's got things to do and family, but I'm just saying if you are friends with them, then that open line of communication is much more easily handled.
Absolutely. And it makes the time that you spend in the gym away from your own family that much better, right? When you have guys that on your staff that you like, that you're friends with, not only on the floor, but off the floor, then they're guys that you want to spend time with. I always say the thing that I probably miss the most about coaching is just those conversations in the locker room and the coach's office after practice or after games, and just kind of sitting and talking basketball or talking about life. And there's no way to replace that. And if you do have that kind of relationship with your assistant coaches, with your staff, it just makes everything so much better, regardless of the outcome of wins and losses on the floor. You can still know can come back, and you got guys in your locker room that you can go to war with, that you're friends with.
Yeah. Yeah. I 100% agree with that.
All right. When you look back on the success that you've had and you think about some things that you've done well as a coach, what are one or two things that you think are the key to your success? And then maybe what's one thing that when you think back to the early part of your career that you're like, maybe I wasn't that good at that piece of it. And it's something that I've had to work on and improve. So maybe keys to your success, and then something that you feel like you've gotten better at over the course of your career.
I think success, a couple things. Number one, I think the development of players, starting with when Dwayne was the coach, we would open the gym all the time, get kids to love playing basketball, and my hope is that kids just develop, they get better. And I think like some of the better players that I have ever had were not better players when they were younger. They developed their skills and they've gotten better. I think I take pride in players improving, player development. And the other thing that I think has helped me have success is allowing players to feel that they can be a part of the program. Even if they get cut in seventh grade, my best player is still playing overseas. So he's 32 years old. He got cut in eighth grade and, he's playing professionally in Europe right now.
Those stories are the best, man. Honestly, think about a kid, and we've had several coaches on that have told, stories about, hey, this kid came out in ninth grade, got cut, came out in 10th grade, got cut, came out in 11th grade, got cut. And then all of a sudden 11th and 12th grade, he grows 4 inches and puts in a bunch of time and a bunch of work. And I think that's a message. It kind of goes back to that youth basketball conversation that we had, right? Like you just never know. If you love the game and you keep working at it, you never know where there's going to be an opportunity. And I think people on the outside, and especially parents who haven't gone through it, I think a lot of times they have this perception that like you have to follow this one pathway. Like if I'm not on the travel team in third grade, that I can't possibly make it. Or if I'm not on this particular AAU team, I can't make it. Or if I'm not doing X, Y, or Z with this trainer, that I can't make it. And you wish you could kind of educate people that, look, there's lots of different pathways. And I still think it comes down to what we talked about earlier. Like if you love the game, you're going to figure out a way to improve and keep working and getting better. And it's just, to me, those are the best stories.
I asked that kid the last time he was in the United States, he lives in Australia now. He was in the United States and we went out to dinner, and I didn't even know that this was important to him, but I just asked him, I said, man, like, I don't think kids in your situation, he got cut in seventh and eighth grade. I said, I don't think not many kids would keep trying out. I said, why did you try out? He goes, coach, I love playing basketball. And I remember that you were sitting there with the eighth grade coach when we made cuts, and you said to all of us, and you looked at me. I don't even know if you remember. You looked at me. Of course I didn't. He said, if you really love playing basketball, it stinks to get cut, but if you want to do it, you got to work at it. You got to work at getting better. And that's what I did. So that meant a lot to me because I don't really remember saying it, but he did. It was that important to him.
I love that. I think that's when you consider as a coach or as a teacher, and you think about all the words that you speak every single day to the kids in your class, to your team. And there's so many kids out there, Duke, I'm sure that you know this, and that's an example of one. And I'm sure you could probably come up with some other examples. And certainly anybody who's played the game and coached the game probably has examples of it, but where something that a coach said to you that I'm sure if you went to them now and said, hey, do you remember when you told me X, Y, or Z? And I can almost guarantee that that coach has no recollection of ever saying that to you. And yet it could be one of the most motivational, inspirational things that somebody's ever said to you, and they don't even remember it. And conversely, you think about yourself as a coach and the number of times that somebody's come up to you and said, hey, I remember when you put your arm around me and said this. And you're like, yeah, I don't remember that. And it just speaks to the power that somebody's words can have. And I think that it's important to remember that. Like you talked about remembering that you're coaching high school basketball players, that you're coaching actual people. And it's not just pawns on a chessboard that you're moving around to see if you can get the final score to be in your favor. There's much more to it than that. I think that story that you just shared illustrates it perfectly. Like, you probably honestly didn't even look at the kid. You know what I mean? You were probably scanning the crowd, and for whatever reason, he just thought that your gaze fixed on him for a second, and boom, like, that kid's still carrying that with him, whatever, 20 years later, 15 years later. To me, that's an incredible power that we all hold.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. The other part, the thing that,
about getting better.
Yeah. I think early on, I was someone, I don't know if how you dealt with this, but I was someone that like was not physically gifted. I had to work my butt off just to be able to get to any level. And, I had a really, really hard time that I didn't have 12 players on my team that felt the same way. And, you know, as time has gone on, you realize every kid is different. And, you know, I wanted every kid to want to have a basketball in their hand. I wanted every kid to sleep with a basketball like I did when I was 10 years old. You know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And, you know, as time goes on, you realize that kids have other loves. They have other sports they love. They have other things they like doing. They're all in different family situations. You know, though, you have to, it's not a one size fit all for kids. I'm still learning that, you know, every day there's challenges, there's eye opening things that I have with my players that, you know, I say, wow, I didn't see that one coming. And I've been doing this 30 years.
it makes a lot of sense. I'm not sure I ever accepted that as a coach. I'm not sure I ever got to 100% acceptance. And
yeah, I'm still trying.
To your point, it's really, really difficult, especially when you are a kid that you couldn't get enough of it and you just wanted more and you kept working. You tried to maximize what limited physical tools that you were given. And then to watch a kid or see a kid and you're like, man, if you would just put a little bit more extra time into it, or if you would just pay a little bit more attention during practice, or those little things that, like when I was at, let's say when I was at basketball camp when I was 12 years old and somebody was teaching some footwork, like I'd be the kid in the back of the line standing there, like trying to move my feet in the same way that coach was demonstrating. Yeah. And like, I just did it. That was just who I was. And so then when you'd see a kid that you're demonstrating something, they're kind of staring off at the ceiling or whatever it is that they're doing, like that, again, it took me a long time to kind of understand that not every kid is wired the way I was. And I think the only way that I've gotten there, and again, I'm still not at 100%, but with my own kids really helped me even more than coaching ever did, to be able to understand that your kids are not you and nobody's going to be wired the exact same way that you're wired. And if you expect people, you know, if you expect your kids to be cranked out and be little mini me's, I guess it probably happened. It probably happens sometimes. There probably are kids that are, you know, follow directly in the footsteps of their parent, but I think it's probably pretty rare. And as a parent, I've had to figure out and understand that, look, my kids are not wired the same way that I am when it comes to athletics. They're just not. And because I love them unconditionally, I've come to be able to figure it out. And I think from a coaching perspective, that's helped me when I think about the teams that I've coached on the travel and the AAU side of it. And I've been out of high school coaching now for whatever, I don't know, 13 years or so. So it's not really relevant to that anymore, but certainly in my coaching with my own kids, it's helped me to understand them and it's helped me to understand their teammates a little bit better and kind of realize that not everybody's trying to get the same thing out of the game of basketball that I was trying to get out of it. Let's put it that way.
Right. And ultimately why I try to tell myself, it's hard though, but I have the same thing with, I have younger children, but it's the same. I have the same, I'm learning too.
Yeah.
But ultimately, why do you play sports? Because you like it. You want to have fun and you want to build on that and teach them to compete.
For
you
sure.
Know what I mean? Like,
yep.
Like, and how, what, you know, the passion that everyone has is going to be a little different when it comes to basketball.
Yeah. I mean, I try to, it is. And one of the things that I've tried to, you know, tell my own kids, and I guess, I don't know if it goes against what I just said or not, but my feeling is like, look, it's fun to be good. Like if you're going to play, it's a lot more fun to be good than it is to not be good. And so if you want to have more fun, well, get better, because then you're going to get the ball in your hands and you're going to get to take more shots. You're going to be a more important part of the team. And
right. I see that to every, you know, kids that play multiple sports that try to use that as an excuse of why they can't work on football because they're playing basketball, or
right.
I can't work basketball because I play baseball. My point to them is if you might not be able to work on basketball as much as someone that doesn't do anything else, but if it's something you want to do, then why don't you try to be great at it somehow, somewhere, you know, like,
absolutely.
I remember I got a call from a player who was he ended up playing baseball at Ashland. So he was playing like 90 baseball games in the summer and really couldn't make basketball, like, tournaments and games and stuff like that. And, I had someone video a picture and I'm at a summer league game and it's like a community member that had my phone number and it's the player at 9 o'clock at night up at the Middlebrook Heights rec with his baseball uniform around doing drills because he just came back from a baseball game and he couldn't make our game and wanted to still get better. And that kid ended up being first team all conference and you can if you want to, you know.
Right. That's really what it's all about. I mean, that still comes down to if you love it, then you're probably going to do what it takes to try to maximize your ability. And that's really all you can ask as a coach is the kid comes as close to reaching their potential as they possibly can. And obviously all kids have different physical capabilities and mental capabilities and all those kinds of things. But ultimately, if as a coach you can inspire a kid to get as close to their potential as you can, then you've done your job. I want to ask you about the consolidation of your school district and just what that was like. So for people, just to kind of give them a background. So where Duke coaches used to be two separate high schools. So you mentioned earlier three different communities, but it used to be two separate high schools. And what year was that, Duke? 2012, 2013, somewhere in there where you guys merged?
Year. So ninth year of the school together.
Gotcha. So at one point, the two high schools merged and Duke ended up taking over the merged program. What was that like that first year where you had kids who previously were obviously your biggest rival and now they're playing together? What was that like? What was that year like for you? Because it's obviously unique. It's something that not very many people, coaches, players get to experience anything like that.
Yeah, there was, I mean, it ended up being very positive. It was like everything came together in terms of basketball talent for us, but it was it was hard on the Berea players right away because, you know, I was their rival coach. You know what I mean? I was their guy that was trying to beat them. And now all of a sudden, you know, I'm the coach, you know,
I'm
him on the back instead of saying, you know, like, get an elbow in him when he's cutting across the lane, you know? So it, you know, we actually, that's, we were fortunate we had the summer. So we did a lot of team stuff that summer. It's just to try for the kids to get to know each other, for them, hopefully the Berea players to realize that, you know, I'm not going to play the 12th best player on Mid Park over a first team all conference kid returning from Berea. And we just had an incredible team. I mean, you know, we had a 6'11 kid who went to play Division I basketball that was at our Mid Park school. We had the conference's best shooter at Mid Park, and Bria had the conference's best point guard who went, got a scholarship to play. And then we had a professional, Joey Bocci is a professional football player for the Bengals. He was a sophomore at the time when the schools combined. We just had everything going on. So, you know, I think we were 22-2 or something that year. It wasn't the very difficult basketball wise because we were so good, to be quite honest with you. It solved a lot of problems.
So you feel like it merged pretty quickly where there was no longer, hey, this kid would have been at Mid Park. This kid would have been at Berea. It pretty much, because of that early success, you never necessarily felt that there was still like an internal divide, even in subsequent years.
No, I really don't. I think somewhat with the parents more than the kids.
Yeah, probably.
Parents were, I mean, the kids were, once they, I mean, basketball was their language. I mean, basketball was what they had in common, and they played. They just had different teammates, you know?
Absolutely.
So, you know, sometimes for the parents, it's hard if, gosh, and it could have been like we had a player who was our backup, you know, point guard his junior year, and he was going in his senior year, and he still was the backup point guard, you know, so that was hard on parents to understand, but the kid, I mean, he understood.
Yeah. Well, when you get out on the floor, I think if you inject truth serum into kids, you know, they know, I mean, you know, when you're a player, you know where you fit in the hierarchy. If you dig down deep enough and get to the truth, it's oftentimes when you think about the questions that sometimes people have about playing time. I think if you were to ask the kid without the parent there and the kid was being completely honest, I would guess 98% of the time the kid knows the reason why they're not getting the playing time that whatever the kid had of them or the kid. It's most of the time that's being driven by parents, unfortunately. I don't want to wrap up Duke by asking you one final question, two-parter. So first part is, when you look ahead over the next year or two, what's the biggest challenge that you have in front of you? And then number two, what's your biggest joy? When you get out of the bed in the morning and you think about what you get to do each and every day, both as a teacher and as a coach, what brings you the most joy about your job and being able to be a head coach there at Berea Mid Park High School?
Biggest challenge over the next couple of years is it's a good challenge to have. We have, you know, we play three sophomores and a freshman, a lot of playing time on varsity right now. And we're doing very well. And so my biggest challenge over the next couple of years is going to be to get those sophomores that are going to be juniors and seniors to understand that other players and other teams are going to keep getting better, and they better work at it if they want to have the success that they talk about having. The biggest thing I love everything about coaching. I love it, Mike. I this is my 23rd year being a head coach. I think my 30th year of coaching. And, I absolutely love it. I love going to practice every day. And, it sounds corny, but I love checking kids' grades every day, you know, to see how they're doing in school. I love that aspect of coaching, the rapport that you constantly build with kids, because it sounds cliche-ish, but you truly are like, you're a coach, but you're around these kids as a coach more than they're around their family for the most part. And I take that very seriously. I love it.
It's a great answer. And I think that it speaks to sort of that coaching lifer mentality, right? It's like every piece of it that you can touch and have an impact on your players through the game of basketball, a game that you've loved since you were a little kid, and you get to live in that every day and be able to have an impact on your players and your community through the game of basketball. To me, there's nothing more rewarding than that. And I think about what I've been fortunate enough to do in my career, and just, again, giving back to the game of basketball, what's been so good to me over the course of my life. I could never repay it with what basketball has brought to me over the course of my life. And I think the passion that you have for what you do clearly came through the microphone tonight without question. Before we wrap up, I want to give you a chance to share how people can find out more about your program. How can they connect with you? Whether you just want to share your email, website, your social media account, whatever. And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Yeah, we communicate and do a lot with Twitter. BHSBball is our Twitter account. Titans Athletics is where we post a lot of stuff as well. That's where you'll see updates about our games, our youth activities, our junior high games. Everything's on those two sites.
Perfect. Duke, I cannot thank you enough for getting a chance to jump on with us. It's been a pleasure having you on and getting to know a little bit more about your story. I've known you for a long time. And, you know, it's funny how sometimes you think about just how long we've been around the basketball scene and just, you know, the friendship that we've had and being able to be a part of seeing your success and having you jump on and getting to know you even better tonight. I really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun for me.
Thanks so much for having me, Mike. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, dude. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.